Okay, great. It is 4 o'clock. Did we call our meeting to order? Do we have a roll call, Allison?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Latchford?
Here.
Commissioner Mason?
Here.
Commissioner Newell?
Here.
Commissioner Salverson?
Here.
Chair Beasley?
Here.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a quorum, so we're ready to go. Mike, could you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
Sure. I pledge allegiance,
To the flag of the United States of America
and to the Republic
for which it stands,
one nation under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Allison, do we have anyone online as far as call to audience is concerned?
No speakers, Mr. Chair.
Okay, then I think what we'll do is we'll pass that by. The next item on our agenda is the staff liaison report. David, you're up.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. Just a couple items I want to highlight for you this evening. First off, I'd like to say that or tell you that our strategic leadership plan, we have strategic leadership plan meeting scheduled this week with our council on Thursday and Friday. So we will be trying to update our two-year strategic leadership plan for the next 2 years, I guess. That is scheduled for this week, towards the end of the week. And then additionally, we are fast approaching, and really we've already kind of kicked off our budget season. We have departmental budget meetings scheduled for a couple weeks from now, the first week of March, and into that second week of March as well. So where we'll really try to sit down with department heads and directors and go through their budget, see where we're at. We've already made some significant strides in regards to CIP, although some of that may be subject to change depending on what comes out of our strategic leadership plan meetings later this week. So with that said, those are kind of the two items I'd like to highlight. We are, like I said, getting right into the throes of budget season. So I would say expect some budget information coming down the pipe soon. We have a calendar that's all set up and has all those details lined out. But obviously, a big part of that, a big piece of that, will be the discussion with PSPRS, which we will continue to have tonight and in future Budget and Finance Commission meetings. So thank you.
Why is it, do I feel, that we budget 12 months out of the year?
Mr. Chair, yes, it's the well-known fact that budget season never really ends. It's always just something that really ought to be done year-round, truthfully. But yes, there are some peaks and valleys to it, and we are quickly approaching one of those peaks. So,
very good. Allison, can you read out the regular session agenda starting with number one, please?
Agenda item number one, review and approval of the January 19th, 2021 regular session meeting minutes.
Does anyone have any comments or corrections on the minutes that were sent to us? Sounds pretty quiet there. Do I have a motion to approve these?
Motion.
Second that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any discussion? I think we can just do this by a voice vote, can we not? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, minutes are approved as is.
Item number two, discussion and action on electing a chair and vice chair for the Budget and Finance Commission, including A, discussion and possible action in electing a chair of the Budget and Finance Commission for the upcoming year, and B, discussion and possible action in electing a vice chair of the Budget and Finance Commission for the upcoming year.
Okay. Let me make a quick comment here, if I could. I'm a great fan of term limitations. So that being said, I would like to move that John Latchford be made chairman of this commission.
A second.
Is there any discussion?
Please.
You've been drafted, John. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Okay. I also propose that John take over effective immediately in terms of the meeting and our function then for the next 12 months. So.
I see. So you're really going to do that, huh? Okay.
I am. I'm going to turn it right over to you.
I see. All right, dear friends. Well, thanks, everyone. And we are going to move forward in electing a vice chair in accordance with the organization of the commission. But before we do that, just a couple of comments, if I could. First, our outgoing chairman has been our chairman for 2 years, and I've had a chance to work with him quite closely on a number of issues, and I can tell you we got our money's worth with his chairmanship. He worked a lot of hours. He gave me a lot of phone calls and a lot of direction, and I greatly appreciated the collegiality of his approach and really putting up with me sometimes when we got into discussions. But at the same time, his knowledge and his workmanlike attitude to really learn the issues and try to be positive in making contributions to those issues, I think played a real role in the leadership that he gave the commission. So with that, I hope all of you will join me and say thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I think we'll always call you Mr. Chairman. It won't confuse you. We'll call you senior chairman. So, told you I'd get you back. Anyway, all right.
Thank you a lot.
Anyway, thanks very much, Jim, for your leadership thus far. I appreciate it. our second issue is to appoint a vice or an electman, vice chairman, I should say. Do I have a nomination from the floor? That means you get to pick yourself, or else I put you up. The vice chairman, by the way, only really comes into play as they need to govern the meeting in the chairman's absence, which could involve anything, including falling off a bike. My biking is pretty good so far, so I don't think you have to worry about that.
So you're a little more stable than I am. That's good news.
Do we have a nomination from the floor? I'll please entertain one.
Well, I would like to nominate Kathy.
Okay, I have a nomination from Ms. Solveson. Can I have a second for that?
I second that.
Okay. Where is Kathy? I don't even know. There she is. Okay. Kathy, I assume that under the regulations for the commission that you're willing to accept that post.
Yes, so long as Chair Latchford, you stay off of bikes.
Yeah. I'll let you know. Anyway, if that being the case, if we could have a voice vote in support of Kathy being appointed and elected as the vice chairman of the commission. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those against, say nay. Hearing none, Kathy, congratulations.
Thank you.
Beach.
All right, let's see. Allison, if you'll read number three, please.
Agenda item three, presentation and possible discussion of the town's fiscal year 2020-2021 mid-year financial update through December 2020.
Okay. David, I'm going to assume that Wendy's going to give this presentation. Is that okay to assume that?
That is correct, Chair Latchford. Ms. Gomez will be presenting for you this evening.
All right, Ms. Gomez, would you please make a presentation, please?
Thank you, Chair Latchford and members of the commission. Let me just share my screen here. This is the one I want. Okay, I'm assuming everybody can see that okay. All right, thank you so much. This is our mid-year update through December. We are presenting the typical funds, the general highway and community center fund, as we always do. But on the mid-year financials, we also bring forward the two utility enterprise funds, just so council and BFC can take a look at those as well. So let's jump right in to the general fund on the revenue side. Looking at our major revenue sources, things looking phenomenal there. We continue to make improvement on our revenues and fine-tune some of those year-end estimates. We look at our local sales taxes. We've bumped those up since our November financials. Some of the areas that are trending over include retail. Our retail is actually up 9% year over year, even with COVID. Utility collections are up, probably due to a combination of weather and possibly the fact that a lot of people are home more often right now. That could be actually sending some of the residential side of things up. Construction is up over budget. If you recall, we brought down some of those estimates back, a year ago when the pandemic was first kind of settling in and there was a lot of unknowns. We shaved back some of those construction budget estimates, but the housing market is so hot right now. Commercial activity continues to be healthy, and so those revenues are going to trend significantly over budget. And then online collections as well. As you remember, we had the legislative change a year or two ago, which basically subjected create a level playing field. And so those without brick and mortar are now subject to sales tax. And those online collections are actually pretty significant for the town. So we have those factored into our year-end estimate as well. Overall, looking to come in about $2.5 million over budget on the local sales taxes, state shared revenues, all those categories are trending as expected. The vehicle license tax and state share sales taxes are just a smidge over budget actually right now, and just doing a straight trend. So we'll keep watching those, but things looking great there. Expecting to come in just a bit over budget. Charges for services, same kind of story we've been telling this fiscal year. Those revenue sources have been impacted by COVID, primarily fare box revenues for transit and some of our parks programming fees. And so those are looking to come in about $250,000 under budget at this point. Licenses and permits, along with local sales tax, that is another revenue category that is just rocking and rolling right now, both on the residential and commercial side. Just for some perspective on the single family residential permits, we budgeted 225 for the fiscal year, 225 permits issued, and we are at 237 through December. So those continue to trend significantly above budget. And commercial permitting activity is healthy as well. We did bring, that activity kind of same in line with local sales taxes back a year ago when the pandemic was first hitting us, not knowing what to expect. We trend back some of those activity, development activity projections too. But fortunately for us, things looking very positive there. So those are expected to come in about $1.1 million over budget at this point. And then we have all other category, which is interest income, our grants. The big chunk in there is the CARES funding. We are expecting in total for those categories to come in just a bit under budget. Really what's driving that variance there are the RTA reimbursements for transit services with significantly reduced activity. Obviously, you'd see a reduction in the reimbursement too. In total, sorry about that. In total, our general fund revenues, we are expecting to come in significantly over budget, close to $3 million or 6.7%. And that is really all due to those additional permit revenues and the sales tax collections. Those are really the two categories that are driving that. Moving on to the expenditure side, things continue to look positive there. Our personnel, we were at about 43% of budget through December. But again, those actuals depend on the timing of payrolls. And I think through December, we were at 12 and a half payrolls versus 26 in the fiscal year. So that is the reason for some of that low percentage of budget through December. But we are expecting to see some vacancy savings as well. And also tied to the RTA reimbursements for transit, obviously we've had less personnel, less drivers on our payroll too. And so a significant chunk of our personnel savings is due to that. On the O&M side, spending is starting to ramp up there. It's still low through December, but we are expecting that to pick up pace. Actuals through December, we're at about $4.4 million. And we are looking at savings at year end of about $300,000 or so. Due to, we're looking at probably some capacity offsets that we may have with some of the funding that got free up with CARES and some of those projects that we had anticipated in there. There may be some carryover of some of those to next fiscal year. So we'll keep watching that. On the capital side, we had talked about these through December. The spending is low year to date. Those are ramping up too. We had purposely kind of held off the first half of the fiscal year to kind of see how things progressed. So expect some pickup there. And we are expecting to come in about on budget for that category. And then our transfers out, those will be on budget. Those are due to the CIP transfers and the transfers to debt service. So overall, the general fund on the expenditure side, we are looking at seeing some savings at year end of just over $1 million, 1.1 or 2.5%. And that's tied to the personnel and O&M categories. Here are the charts for the general fund. You can see through December, revenues of $26.7 million compared to last year, $20.1. Obviously, a big chunk of that is the CARES funding, but even when you back that off, it's still over, I think, about 6% year over year. And then the expenditures compared to last fiscal year, 18.6 compared to 19.6 last year. So things trending well. Our year-to-date surplus is $8.1 million. Obviously, the bulk of that CARES funding. We are estimating a year-end surplus of about $2.8 million, so an addition to fund balance. If you compare that to what we budgeted, which was actually a planned deficit, planned use of fund balance of about $1.2 million. So overall, in total, $4 million to the good in terms of the year-end fund balance for the general fund, which is great. We're looking at an ending fund balance of about $23.7 million. That equates to just over 53% of budgeted expenditures. And that does exceed our council 25% policy by about $12.5 million. So there are some opportunities there per our policies to direct some of that funding based on council direction to either PSPRS, the unfunded liability, or capital funding, which is outlined in our financial policies. Moving on to the highway fund, things pretty standard there. HERF revenues still continue to trend fine. They're at $1.8 million through December, or about 52% of budget. We are expecting to end the fiscal year for HERF revenues just a smidge over budget. On the grant revenue side of things, as we've mentioned last month, those are tied to the LaToya project, and that project is complete. We aren't expecting any additional reimbursements at this time. On the expenditure side of things, the expenditures in the highway fund right now through December total about $2.1 million, or 53% of the budget. The figures do now include the fall portion of what we've spent on our pavement preservation program. So that's the reason for the increased actuals there through December. We are looking to end the fiscal year, though, just a bit under budget, about 4%. And that's really tied to personnel savings, the personnel that were tied to LaToya, and then a couple of other positions where we had some vacancy savings for a bit of time. Here's a chart for the highway fund compared to last fiscal year. On the revenue side, really the difference there is that one-time HERF monies that we'd received last fiscal year that I've mentioned previously. That was about $200,000 that all cities and towns received last year. So when you back that out, things are about flat. The expenditure side of things, the $2.1 million compared to $1.5 million last year, that's just due to the pavement preservation program and the timing of some of those expenditures. Right now through December, the fund is at a deficit of about $228,000, but you may recall or notice on that attachment B, we did actually plan for a budgeted deficit or use of fund balance of about $160,000. The good news is with a little bit more of the fine-tuning and the scrubbing of the year-end estimates that we do, we're actually looking to use less of fund balance than what we planned, so about $135,000 compared to the $160,000. And that would bring us to an estimated ending fund balance in the highway fund of about $684,000. For the community center fund, contracted operating revenues through December are at about 47% of budget, or $1.7 million. When you look at that compared to last fiscal year, they're up close to $300,000, or about 20% higher than last year. The town operating revenues, we mentioned these last month, those are considerably below budget just due to the impact of COVID. You know, reduced foot traffic in combination with the fact that the facility has been closed on and off. On the half-cent sales tax revenues, those are trending slightly better than expected. Obviously, with the half-cent sales tax, you know, that's not applicable on the construction sales tax or the utilities. But what you're really seeing here in terms of a slight overage is obviously the good retail sales that we're seeing and online collections, too. On the expenditure side of things, the contracted expenditures are at about 51% of budgets, or about $2.3 million through December. When you compare that to last fiscal year, that is lower by about $150,000, which is about 6% compared to December of fiscal year 1920. Our town operating expenditures are also below budget due to COVID, so we are hoping to offset a good chunk of that revenue shortfall with some savings that we will undoubtedly see with both personnel and O&M expenditures for the Community Center Fund. Here's our chart through December for the Community Center Fund. We have revenues 3.2 compared to 3.1 million last year, so about flat. Contracted revenues, the golf revenues, are helping to offset some of the town operating revenue shortfalls that we're seeing. With the expenditures, they're actually down year over year, $2.8 million compared to $3.3 million. Again, that's both sides of the house, the contracted expenditures and the town operating expenditures being lower than last fiscal year. Right now, the fund is operating at a surplus of about $437,000 through December. We are looking to end the year with a slight surplus, about $17,000. When you compare that to the budgeted surplus, or the budgeted addition to fund balance, that was about $221,000. So, you know, unfortunately, it really does come down to the town operating side of things and just the strain that we're seeing there because of COVID. But thankfully, the contracted side of things is helping to offset that a little bit, as I mentioned, and we are looking at coming in with a fund balance of about $880,000 at the end of the year. And then we'll just touch on our enterprise funds real quick. Things looking very positive there. In the water fund, sometimes some of those weather trends work to their favor, and sometimes they don't. But this year they are, and since it's been a hot, dry year with a very disappointing monsoon season last fall and summer, water sales are trending above budget. Also, people being home more often and maybe using more water. And so those are expected to end the year about $1.1 million over budget. The charges for services are trending as expected. That's our groundwater preservation fee in there through December. On the expense side of things, they're trending as expected for the water utility fund through December. They are at about $11.3 million or 52.2% of budget. We are looking to end the year about $600,000 or 2.8% below budget. And that's just due to a budgeted transfer that we are making for capital projects to the impact fee fund. So I believe last fiscal year we had those projects split between the two funds and it just became a little clunky. And so instead, those projects are budgeted 100% in the impact fee funds, and then the water utility operating fund does budgeted transfers for those costs. Stormwater fund, last but not least, the revenues total about $735,000 through December, or 51% of budget. We are expecting to end the year just a smidge over on those stormwater revenues, $11,000 or 0.8%. And then on the expense side of things, those are trending slightly below budget at about $660,000 or 44% through December. We are expecting those to come in just a bit over budget by about $80,000 or 5%, but that is due to a planned use of budgeted contingency for some capital projects that Council did approve back on February 3rd. And with that, we'd be happy to take any questions you may have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Gomez. I appreciate that presentation. Can I open up the floor to commissioners? And if you have a question, could you please ask it?
Quick question on the community center fund. Is there anything in here for Push Ridge?
Chair Latchford, Commission Member Beasley, yes, push expenditures are factored into these figures.
I can't say Mr. Chairman anymore. Mr. Chairman, may I be recognized?
call us all Chairman.
Mr. Beasley, I did want to, what's reflected here are the expenses associated with our current track, not with any decisions that the council may make on what they choose to do later. So in terms of just the regular maintenance, some, you know, minimal water use to keep things going and keeping the property updated, otherwise no further expenses are reflected.
So if there are any decisions made by the council to do something with that course, then the budget will have to be adjusted accordingly. Is that what happens?
That's correct. And we did provide a pro forma to them showing what the potential impacts would be based on information that we have now on our projections for next fiscal year.
I have a couple
other questions from commissioners.
Yeah, I have a couple questions with regards to golf. You know, the performance of the golf courses are listed on the attachment C2, but I know we've asked this before, but I think some citizens want to know that the golf courses are not getting a free ride with regards to the water. And I'd like to ask, just so we could put it on the record, where are the costs for the water included in the budget? And the documents listed.
Commission Member Newell, the costs for water, per the format that this particular contractor uses, utilities are actually apportioned some in their maintenance line items and some of their general administrative line items. Actually falls into both.
So there's no hidden water cost. All the expenses of water use on the courses are included in the performance up to date.
That's correct, Commissioner. Okay.
I know it's been a hot and dry year, and water usage is a key concern. you know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, we've been using more water in general over the years through the utilities budget. Do we know if there's been a significant more water being used by the courses this year due to the temperature?
Commissioner Newell, I believe Bernie Eaton is on the call. He is the general manager, and he may be able to speak to that a little further about the particular usage year to date.
Thank you, Wendy. Commissioner Newell, we are through December. Sorry, spreadsheet's a little slow.
Sure thing. Take your time.
We are dollar-wise about $60,000 higher than projected budget. And compared with last year, I'm trying to float through two different operating management company spreadsheets at the same time.
Sure.
Water. And that is about 70,000, roughly more than last year.
Okay. Do you have a, Bernie, since you're here, do you have an idea of what the increase in rounds played compared to last year was so far?
Certainly through December, we are 53% more rounds than last year, 44,535 versus 28,980.
Okay. And
that was through January. I'm sorry, Commissioner Newell. I know we had discussions earlier. We were 37,500 compared to 23,000 the year before through December. So still about 14,500.
Okay. Thank you. Now I know we have the estimates on the C2 form. Do those include drops in revenue for May and June when you're planning to close one of the courses for the planned irrigation repairs?
Commissioner Newell, that is reflected in the year-end forecast.
Okay, so the year-end forecast includes the fact that we've been paying more for water than we did last year and that we're going to have one of the two courses closed as planned in May and June. Is that correct?
Course closure, Commissioner Newell, would be May, June, July, August, right. And September.
But in this plan, in this fiscal year, it's just May, yeah. June.
Yes, yes.
Okay, perfect. The other question I had is we had in 2019, when the council decided to keep 36 holes, they set some goals, and I wanted to get some questions to get an idea of what those, since we are at the halfway turn, what the key performance indicator might be to reaching those goals. The first piece, obviously, is the revenue projection that you've listed, listed on C2 that includes the extra water costs and the 2 months of closure on the Conquistador course. Another piece of that is the HOA contribution for fiscal year 2021. I believe that's scheduled to be $125,000. Do we have a date that the town is scheduled to receive those payments?
Commissioner Newell, those have a due date of April 1st, and we are getting ready to bill as we speak.
Okay. Another listed item there was when we were talking about setting the town subsidy number of for golf, that we were going to be also looking at the amount of sales tax that was being directed back to Oro Valley due to the that was generated by the golf operations. Do we have an idea of what that number might look like for this year?
Commissioner Newell, yes, I do have some of that data available today. Bear with me just a second. Let me just pull some of that up. Okay, some of the data I can share with you today that I have readily available. So the amount of sales tax directed back to the town that's been generated by the golf operations. For the first 6 months, it came to about 28,000.
Okay.
And that's the full 2.5% town sales tax, not just the half cent.
Do we have the, obviously water usage was up. Do we have an estimate on the utility tax paid by the golf operations?
Commissioner Newell, I do not have access to that information, at least not today. That may be something that our water utility may be able to pull for you. Because of the way that the facility submits their TPT tax, it actually comes directly through me. And so I see that in terms of the utility tax, I don't see that directly. So that's something that we could probably get for you, but I don't have that information today.
I'm just concerned. I want to make sure that, you know, the council set up that key performance indicator of, you know, the amount of sales tax subsidy for golf operations. And that was, you know, from my memory, it should be the estimate off the C2 for the profit loss minus the amount paid for by the HOAs minus the sales tax generated from golf fees at the course and merchandise, and minus the amount of utility tax. And I believe the goal set for council was they wanted that golf subsidy number under 750,000. And it appears that if things stay on track, we're going to be well on the way to hitting that number this year, even considering that we've got a utility bill higher due to the drought this summer, and that we've got one of the courses closed 2 months of the fiscal year for maintenance. I think this is a very positive number moving forward. I'm very pleased. Obviously, we have a long way to go, and I think there's still work for more improvement, but I'm very pleased with how things are moving so far.
Thank you, Commissioner Newell. Just a couple of follow-up points there on this. And just to be clear on the first answer regarding the water, some of that is being allocated into the general and administrative line item, and some of that is going into maintenance. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, Chair Latchford. It's apportioned between those two line items.
Okay, so it's being, but we are capturing 100% of the usage. So that just throws off the variance as you get to the end of the year when you're looking at the projection to the budget. But if we're tracking it, that's fine. And on another item regarding golf course, I somewhere along the line heard that we were over 300 members now on the golf course. Is that correct? Or
Bernie,
Chairman Latchford, as we sit today, this afternoon, we have 288 full members and 24 seasonal members, which are 30, 60, 90-day memberships, which will fluctuate in and out throughout the season. But the target goal, I believe, set by council was 275 full members, and we are at 288 currently.
And what since that's one of the KPIs, is what's your projection for the end of the year? Are you looking for more membership coming on?
Chairman Latchford, we are hopeful for 300 by the end of the fiscal year.
Okay, so I'm really jumping ahead of you a little bit. While I'm on the community center, of course, Ms. Cova, as you reported that we have a number of members that are not coming in. I think it was discussed at the last meeting that memberships are down and programs have less attendance because people are rightfully concerned about the COVID, and some of the discontinuation of the programs has been put in place. Are we getting any kind of indication of what the rest of the year will look like? Is where we are right now is where we're going to wind up, or do you think we'll see membership increase as the vaccination program rolls out? I don't want to get into a discussion about the vaccination program, but anyway, it is happening. I saw it for myself the other day. So,
Chair Laxford, you know, we have brought down those year-end estimates quite a bit. As you can see, for the year-end estimates on the attachment C1, but you know, we're hopeful that traffic is going to increase. You know, obviously when the facility was closed, we weren't collecting any revenues there, either. And so, you know, things could continue to improve in terms of the actuals year to date. But again, yeah, it's just a combination of the facility having been closed, reduced foot traffic, but I'm hopeful, you know, as people get their vaccines, you know, people are outside exercising right now. But we're looking forward to, you know, getting past this and getting people back in those doors. And I'm hopeful that that will occur.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that. But the performer that we're showing, the projections we're showing for the end of the year concern sort of considers the current situation, and that's what we're basing it on. All right. Any other questions for Ms. Goins regarding the mid-year report from the commissioners?
Yes, a couple questions. One of them I think was answered. I was looking at on C2, the increase in member monthly dues, and I'm assuming that is consistent with the increase in membership that you're showing. You're expecting to bring in about 100,000 more in dues than you initially budgeted. So I'm assuming that's as a result of the increase in membership. So that's great, if that's correct. But my bigger question is the $4 million that we're gonna be under budget for the general fund, is there a plan for that? Or has there been discussion on perhaps what we might use that for? And is there a timeline for that? Is that something that we need to wait till the end of the year?
Our town manager may have more information to add, but you know, per our adopted policies, monies over the 25% council policy threshold for the general fund, those are specifically to be directed towards one-time expenditures to include the PSPRS unfunded liability and capital needs. So in terms of a timeline, Mary can speak to that further if she chooses to.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Salverson, actually Vice Chair Salverson. We are actually going to be beginning that process this week with our strategic planning discussions with the town council. And so we'll be getting their input on priorities. But Ms. Gomez is right. They're, you know, we have to take a look at not only what's available now, what are our capital needs, which we're doing, and those are, we've got preliminary capital lists that we'll be reviewing with the council this week. And we also need to be looking ahead at the future as we approach build out mm-hmm. and we start seeing our construction sales tax dollars go down. You know, the fact that we got a lot of extra permits this year, because the market is hot, we only have so many lots, right? And so we're just speeding up when we get to the end of build out. So it is important that we look at that resource, not just for what we can do right now, but what do we need to prudently plan for by maybe putting some of that money into the capital fund for future capital projects, maybe when we don't have quite what we need for our regular yearly capital needs. And then also, as you know, we're going to be coming back to you, or a consultant is, and Mr. Gephardt will be giving you an update on where they are shortly. But that may play into where some of those resources go based on input from the Budget and Finance Commission, and then, of course, strategic direction of the town council. So, you know, sometimes it sounds like a big number, but you know, even our preliminary number for capital right now, if we had all the money in the world, we have almost $5 million worth of projects.
Right.
And so, you know, and I'm not saying that that's what will be in the final budget, but that's where we've kind of culled it down to for next year, that that will get us started as we put a recommended budget together.
Thank you.
Okay. Do we have any other questions that we'd like to ask staff, Ms. Gomez?
I have a couple. I get back to the community on the golf. I was in your narrative. You say you're in forecast for total rounds of about a little over 70,000, and this includes 27,000 for rounds for members and 40,000 for public rounds. Is that the normal proportion, or is it normally that many more public rounds and member rounds?
Commissioner Mays, I'm going to defer to Bernie for some feedback on that question.
Member Mason, depending on the facility, again, our marketing approach for the facility was to balance memberships with public play. A normal golf course sees, with a membership component, would see possibly closer to 50-50. Some have seen 60-40. More traditionally, the membership side will play more rounds as the membership component is most people will join a club as a membership as the lowest cost alternative to paying daily fees. We have exceeded our expectations on the public side with our programming and marketing, and that's why we see a higher projected public round number than originally anticipated.
Okay, thank you. Also on C2, just looking at green fee revenues, it looked like October is quite a bit less than every other month between July and December. Did something happen in October, or is it just prorated differently? Or so it's 93,000, everything else seems to be, you know, pretty much over 100,000. Did something happen in October?
Member Mason, yes. Starting in October, is we had one golf course closed for the full month.
All right.
Between the two courses being overseeded.
Okay. And then for personnel, it looks like your personnel costs vary quite a bit from one month to the next. What's the reason for that?
Member Mason, I would have to look further into the month by month. I don't have the C2 in front of me. Starting in November, we did reopen the restaurant, the Overlook restaurant. Okay. So there would be some additional personnel dollars for food and beverage.
Okay, thank you. And just on the general fund, you mentioned in the narrative that because we've gone through mid-year, that now you're kind of looking at projects that were deferred. If you add more projects, well, that will, I assume, will change the estimated fund balance of 23.7 then, if you start adding deferred projects in for the rest of the fiscal year?
No, Commissioner Mason, what we're getting at there is just the fact that we had some budgeted projects that we purposely kind of held off on doing until we got kind of more, you know, halfway through the fiscal year, just to make sure that revenues looked good, that things were trending in the direction that we wanted to see. And so where you're going to see that start to impact is, like, you know, month to month actuals. But all of that's been incorporated into the year-end estimate. So when we talk about things being deferred, they were all budgeted items, budgeted capacity that we were just kind of being conservative about and holding off in terms of starting those earlier in the year.
Because a lot of your expenditures are below 50% right now, quite a bit, obviously. So you're pretty much projecting it's going to kind of stay like that for the rest of the fiscal year, then you're not going to try to add more employees or any other things like that?
No, Commissioner Mason, not at this time.
Okay. And just for golf real quick, I just thought, are we still in the design phase for the irrigation project?
Commissioner Mason, yes, we are still in the design phase. We don't have those cost estimates yet, but we do anticipate them in the not too distant future. And then we'll obviously have to look ahead, and depending on what is required or what the council's decision is on push, we'll have to factor all of that in as we look at investing in the irrigation system.
Okay. That's all I have. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. One last question I have, and it sort of tails on to what Vice Chairman Salverson was talking about a little bit, and that is in the general fund. And I know we're just projecting at the moment, but there is, as we look at the projections through the end of the fiscal year, there's quite an acceleration in some expenditures to get us to the projection of finishing with a surplus of $2.765 million. And is some of that due to the requirements that we're going to have to expend on the CARES Act money? Or is that acceleration reflective of what Mr. Mason just asked regarding deferred projects? Or is it a combination of all of that?
Chair Latchford, just to clarify, so we have already spent the CARES funding. The CARES funding was directed towards public safety personnel costs, so we have expended those and you know, obviously billed for those and received reimbursement. What some of that's tied to is what the CARES funding freed up. So some of the initiatives that were in the budget as a result of that freed up funding, that's some of the stuff that we were kind of holding off on spending until we got further in the fiscal year. So it's partly that, and it's also part due to other capital that we've routinely budgeted, be it, you know, IT needs, our computer replacements and servers, some of our grant-funded capital equipment, public safety grant-funded capital equipment has been slow in spending, that kind of thing. So it's sort of a combination of those two when we look at where we're at in actuals compared to where we are expecting to end the fiscal year.
I see. Okay. All right. Very good. That gives me a better, clearer picture of that. All right. It can be tough to spend money. Sometimes it takes a little effort. So, all right, commissioners, are there any other questions you would like to ask? All right, hearing none, Ms. Gomez, thank you again for your presentation, always very thorough, and to all, it looks like a very, very strong year for a lot of reasons and a very unusual year. I see no red flags here that have come up, and I thank you for all of that information. With that, we're going to move on to number four and the agenda, and Allison, if you'd be so kind as to give us that description.
Sure. Agenda item 4, discussion of items to include in the scope of work for a request for proposal, RFP, or factors to consider in conducting a competitive solicitation for the town's audit firm.
Thank you, Allison. Mr. Gephardt, I believe this is going to be your presentation.
Yes, thank you, Chair Latchford, members of the commission. I've attached in your packet this evening a small piece of the RFP. What I've left out is a lot of the boilerplate language, just because that gets pretty lengthy and tedious, and it really doesn't change from solicitation to solicitation. So what you have before you this evening really is kind of an introduction section, which includes a background, a scope of services, etc. That's all really included on pages 1 through 7 of what's been attached in your packet this evening. And then pages 8 through 11 really discuss or deal with the evaluation requirements and the weighting that goes on in the selection process by the evaluation committee. So I believe that you should have kind of a strong sense of what this document is going to look like when it actually gets submitted out on the street. And so what we're asking for, what staff is asking for, is just any input that the commission has that could strengthen the document, any changes in the weighting of how this the various firms that submit will be scored, etc. So if there are no suggested improvements, then that's fine. But we did want to bring that to you this evening and allow the commission to weigh in and have input into the process.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Kimmler. Commissioners, do you have any questions on the proposal? Yes, Mr. Beasley.
David, you mentioned that there's a few pages of boilerplate out that we didn't see. Does that include things like pre-bid conference, some type of bid question, limitations from a timing perspective, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I think Commissioner Beasley, members of the commission, I think the general schedule is out, actually included on page 5 of 11 of your packet this evening, and that includes, or sorry, that's just the audit. That's not the schedule for
the RFP itself. No.
Yeah. No. So. If there is a pre-bid conference, we will cross that bridge when we get there. There is an option, certainly, for us to have a pre-bid conference, but sometimes it's not necessary, quite frankly. It really depends on what type of questions we're getting from the various firms, and also whether there's a request by the firms to have a pre-bid conference. If we don't get very many questions, then sometimes it's not necessary. Other times it is, just to provide clarification and direction to the firms as to the process. So yes, I guess the short answer is yes. If there's that is part of the piece that you don't see here, that's just kind of more boilerplate that we include on any RFP or solicitation.
Okay. I have a couple of little nits or questions for you. On page 2, you've got requirements for fiscal year 2006-07. Should that be updated to 2021?
Yeah, Mr. Beasley, Commissioner Beasley, members of the commission, that actually is, it goes back to the standard, I'm trying to find it here.
Number 5 under deliverables.
Yes, thank you. Dealing with the standard for the courts, and basically that standard is that's the beginning of the standard, and then it's every 3 years thereafter. So, you know, whether we, you know, want to include that, update that date. I mean, we certainly can do so, but I think what we were trying to get at there was just that was the beginning of when that standard took effect and when we needed to comply. And so, I don't know if we want to change that or not. I mean, that was something that I noted as well. I left it in there just because of the way that it reads, you know, that's kind of the baseline. And then you have every 3 years that you have to, do this audit of the Supreme Court based upon, or not the of the Supreme Court, audit of the magistrate court based upon direction from the Supreme Court. So that's the way that I read it. I think it's fine, but if that needs to be changed or if the commission desires me to change, I don't have any qualm with that.
It was a question, not a request to make that change. I just didn't understand why those dates were in there like that. similar issue on the next page three, working paper retention. Where'd the 3 years come from?
So 3 years is, that is reflective of, number one, that's a pretty standard records retention date. But really what we're dealing with there is if there is the records retention requirements for the state of Arizona. So we just want to make sure that if there's anything that, subpoenas or things of that nature that, that we're in compliance, with the state and its records retention rules and laws. So that's really where that's coming from. But 3 years really is pretty standard, for financial documents. I mean, if you look at what the IRS requires for tax returns, it's a 3 year requirement unless there's something major going on. You have a significant misstatement of your tax liability, et cetera. Then it can be extended beyond that, I believe, to 7, if I'm not mistaken. But that's basically where that's coming from.
David, is the scope that you've got in here similar to what the scope is for the current audit company that we've got? Is there anything different that you've added or subtracted?
Commissioner Salverson, Vice Chair Salverson, members of the commission, sorry about that. It really is pretty much the same scope. I did add... this year we were subject to the permit review, the permit fee review. Our auditors did that this year. It's a requirement for every 2 years. I didn't see that in our current contract, but that was something that as I had discussions with our partner in charge of our engagement this year, as he was out doing field work, and even prior to that, just, he was asking whether we wanted his firm to complete that requirement for us this year. I said, absolutely. I didn't see a need to bring in a separate accounting firm to do that analysis if they were already out on site. And it just seemed to be an efficient way to handle it. Other than that, I think the scope pretty much is the same. I didn't see any in the initial draft, and I don't know what we've done historically for an RFP for audit services. I mean, it's probably been a while since we've been out, is my understanding. But I didn't see anything in regards to the single audit, which we will definitely be subject to this upcoming year. We're going to well exceed $750,000 in federal money spent. And really, over the next couple years, I anticipate that's going to be the case. We obviously received the CARES Act money this year of $5.3 million, and I just had a call earlier today, a conference call with our police chief and some of her staff to discuss some of the grant potentials and possibilities for our police department, and they're significant. I think that, there's, with the new administration, there's some different opportunities out there, and they've been successful in pursuing those opportunities. So I really see that as being, that's a pretty typical, requirement when you go out for an audit firm to have that single audit be a part of the RFP, just because it is really a separate audit that the auditors have to do specific to federal funds. That's a federal requirement for accepting those funds.
And the other question I have is there enough detail in the deliverable section for the potential auditors to come up with a 5-year cost, total cost?
Commissioner or Vice Chair Salverson, members of the commission, I believe so. I think that the requirements are certainly there. What we're asking for audit firms is not anything that they are not familiar with.
Okay.
And if they are unfamiliar with it, then they're probably not going to be accepted, truthfully. So, what we're doing, what we're requiring or requesting of the audit firms, I think they should have enough here to give them a sense of how they want to bid this job. You know, I think 5 years, the 5-year term is pretty standard. Sometimes you see three, but typically you don't see terms longer than five. I think the 5-year term, I'm a little biased, I guess, but I think I like it a little bit better than three, just because it gives that audit firm a little more, I guess, cover in terms of recovering what their initial investment is. The first year of the audit is typically not, especially if they're a new firm that hasn't audited the client before, that's typically not a year that they earn money on. They typically lose money on the first year, and then they regain it in subsequent years as they become more familiar with the audit, with the different risk requirements and documenting the risk areas of the audit, that they can build in procedures that provide a little more efficiency. But there's a, you know, the first year out on the engagement, there's a lot of documentation, internal control documentation and testing and things. And they have to update those, but updating it is different than generating it from scratch, certainly. So, as we're all aware. So, you know, it's, I think there's enough here. And then that, again, that 5 years kind of gives the audit firm a little bit of protection that, yeah, there's, as things go along, as they become more familiar and more efficient in their audit procedures and understanding what our needs are, that they will be able to recoup that investment that they put out in the first year.
Makes sense.
I just had a couple of comments. I think you got a pretty good start there. It's pretty comprehensive. Just a couple things. On your expenditure limitation, I wonder if you just want to clarify that you won't be under home rule, because the audit requirements on that becomes a little bit more detailed.
Commissioner Mason, members of the commission, I think what I want to say there, and I thought of that, we are actually we're available or able to be under home rule for another 2 years. That's when our home rule technically expires. So even though we did the permanent base limitation, I think as I read it, as I understand the issue, home rule, we're still eligible to remain under home rule until it technically expires, that 4-year period. And then at that point, we would no longer be under home rule because we would be under the permanent base. Now we can still be under permanent base, but I think home rule is going to actually be a little more conservative, because it really is really based upon your budget, over the next couple of years. That's the way I interpret that, is that when you have both approved, that you are still under home rule, and then at the point that home rule expires, then that's when permanent base limitation kicks in. So, but yes, I that probably could add a little bit of clarification there, because under the 5-year term of the, what would be proposed under the 5-year term of the agreement, that home rule would expire, and then we would be under the permanent base limitation. So that's a good point. I probably should tighten that up.
I just was looking at your audit schedule or timeline that you have in there. That's pretty aggressive. Is that going to be doable? Is that
Commissioner Mason, members of the commission, it's tight. Yes, I recognize that. These things are all subject. I mean, the time frame for the audit itself is subject to negotiation, and sure. And I think it's fluid. Certainly, if we would have been, utilizing the suggested time frame for this past fiscal year, this past audit season, obviously we wouldn't have made it because we didn't issue the report until December 31. So. I'm hoping, again, it was my first year. I'm hoping that we don't have a pandemic this upcoming year. We're going to try our best to stick to the schedule, but if things need to flex a little bit, I think usually the audit firms that I've been dealing with, they're more than willing to flex as needed, just so long as we can hit our time frames of getting a final report delivered by December 31.
Yeah, if you can make that October deadline for the CAFR being submitted, I'll buy you lunch.
We'll push, but we'll see what happens. Yeah, no, it's a heavy lift, but I think we've made a lot of progress this last year drafting the report. So we'll see what we can do. I would love to hit that October deadline, but candidly, I've never hit the October. I've never hit the October deadline, but you know, I have hit, you know, early to mid November. So we'll see. I mean, Wendy's going to be drafting a huge portion of the report this upcoming year, so I'm looking forward to having a little more, spreading out that workload a little bit better this upcoming year, now that the foundation has been laid. So
I never made it either, so it's a good goal, but very good. That's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you.
Dave and I have just one section that kind of popped out at me. It's on page 3. This is probably a question directed to you and Mary. And it's a section called Irregularities and Suspicious Activity. Now, typically, my experience is that tends to be more in the contract than the solicitation. But that's probably not the bigger issue. The issue that kind of comes to my mind is that it's putting the auditors in the position of having to respond and communicate any of those particular circumstances to either you or Mary. And so it's the financial officer and the town manager, which over the next 5 years will hopefully be both of you. But I think best practice would probably indicate that there should be someone outside the structure of management. And perhaps you might put some materiality around that and everything. But in fact, I'm not sure. I don't recall if governmental agencies are subject to Sarbanes-Oxley, but back when that law came out, I know that was one of the areas that was strongly emphasized. And in many cases, public firms had to have an outside entity that entertained those and handled those situations. And you don't have an audit committee. Typically, if you had an audit committee, it would be the chair of the audit committee. So you might want to give that some discussion. I don't particularly have any major issues because you haven't had any, but it's something you might want to try as a best practice, particularly when dealing with a third party, such as an audit firm, if you want to put in there. Again, I've typically seen this in the contract, not in the solicitation. But that's not my bailiwick. I don't know the solicitation rules that you have there, so I don't want to get say that I can advise you on that end. So that's my only comment. I think the rest of it, very professional and very comprehensive, and I think hopefully you'll have a very difficult time picking one particular firm. So, do we have any other questions? Yes.
I do. David, on page 4, you're listing fund structure. And you've got number of individual funds, special revenue funds, 5. Number of legally adopted annual budgets, 4. What's missing?
Yeah, Commissioner Beasley, want to call you chair still. Sorry. So what's missing there is the internal service fund that we have for the town. And that internal service fund, basically what happens to it is it gets rolled into the general fund. It is stated separately in the financial statements, but there's a consolidation when it rolls up to the government-wide statements that it gets consolidated with other funds. And so... So that's the one that is the oddball, and that's not atypical. I mean, that's pretty standard for an internal service fund. If you understand what an internal service fund does, it basically provides services to other funds and then charges those other funds for the services. So So it's basically a consolidation process that happens. It gets rolled into those other funds, and so that's what's happening there essentially.
Okay. All right. Just one other nit. Find it. Oh, on page 7, you're referring to work area, telephone, blah, 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 blah. Do you really want to list email, or do you want to list Wi-Fi or internet access or something like that?
Commissioner Beasley, member of the commission, yeah, email's probably not necessary. This is probably a holdover from the past. But typically, if you have access to Wi-Fi, then you have access to your own email. You're right. That's probably not necessary. We're certainly not going to set up a town email address for our audit firm. That wouldn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. Okay. The points allocation that you put in here, David, is that how it's been in the past?
Commissioner Beasley, members of commission, I honestly don't know. Again, I don't know the last time we went out for RFP for audit services. So I know that we did utilize, that's something I could find out. I just don't have an answer for you this evening. We did utilize kind of a combination in terms of scope and drafting this document of the city of Tucson, because apparently they've been out recently for audit services, and the town's the town of Oro Valley's document that we've used historically. So we kind of morphed both of those documents and trying to come up with something that was really solid and captured the scope of what we're trying to accomplish here.
But those are basically the numbers that you can live with, basically.
I'm open to if the commission has a strong objection or strong feeling of weighting this a little bit differently. I'm certainly open to that. Just to clarify for the record, overall firm experience, professional capability, and record of performance is weighted at 40 points maximum. Expertise and experience of the firm's personnel, key personnel, is 35 points, and then the price proposal is 25. So if the commission has a strong feeling one way or the other of wanting to weight price a little bit higher, because right now it's weighted the least, it's only 25% of the 100 points that could be that would be the maximum score for the proposal. If the commission wants to weight that a little bit heavier or weight it lighter, I'm open to that. But basically, it is heavily weighted upon experience and both firm experience and key personnel experience, essentially.
Mike, do you have any comments on that?
It pretty much follows DFOA. Recommendations where they list price down at the end and experience, and it looked to me like it was fine. I mean, if you raised or lowered them a couple, I don't think it would matter that much. But I think experience of the audit firm and governmental is really important, because if you don't get that, you spend a lot of time teaching instead of doing the audit work. So I thought it was very reasonable.
I think I could add to what Mike says. I know that, having served on a lot of audit firms over the years, when I first started out, I think the weight would have been 95% price and 5% for the rest. And the AICPA came out a few years ago. Now, this could be self-serving, I realize, who they represent, but tried to emphasize that price shouldn't be the major factor, because if you don't have the right audit firm in there with the right experience and the right capabilities and the right people, you're going to pay for it in the end. And I personally went through a situation where I did pick an audit firm, and I paid for it in the end. It took a lot more time and effort, and I think it probably went almost 2 years negotiating the bills. So I think that I wasn't particularly alarmed. In fact, I thought that probably was in keeping with what most organizations would do nowadays from the standpoint of comparison to the other sections. But, does anyone else have any thoughts on it?
You get what you pay for.
Okay. All right. Do we have any other comments or things for David to consider? I know he's ready to get going and put this out on the street. And David, is there a limitation on how many firms you're going to entertain a response from, or is it wide open?
No, Chair Latchford, members of the commission, there really isn't. We just, you know, the point of an RFP is, you know, you probably are all well aware, we're just trying to provide a very level playing field for the different firms that are capable and qualified. And so, you know, we're not going to try to pick favorites or anything like that. We want to, you know, see which proposals come in, who's interested in bidding on our job, score those according to the criteria and the rubric that we establish, and then obviously make a selection based upon what we believe is most advantageous to the town in serving us and our needs most, you know, the most completely and wholly. So so that's really, you know, the point here is really just to have a level playing field. And if we get, you know, 15 responses, then it causes a lot of work for us to go through each of those 15 and score. But I don't think we'll get that many. There's, you know, the various firms, and I'm familiar with most of them now in Arizona, the various firms that play in governmental audits, they're all really good firms. And so it just is, and they know, you know, you have to really have a strong background, a strong client base and technical expertise and experience in performing audits, because our governmental audits are definitely different than for-profit audits. So, and so there's kind of a, you know, there's, you know, probably, I don't know, I don't want to guess, but probably about 15 firms out there, even statewide, that are capable and qualified of serving a job of our nature, of our size and scope. And, you know, and I, you know, some of those may not bid because maybe, you know, they're currently they have enough on their plate or whatever. There's can be all kinds of different factors involved there. But I'm hopeful that we get, you know, 5 to 7 at least. So we have a very competitive process, and I'm looking forward to, you know, to going through it and seeing what we can do.
All right. Well, thank you very much, David. Appreciate that. And we'll look forward to hearing your result. With that, we're going to move on to number 5 of the agenda. And Allison, if you would kindly read that for us.
Agenda item number 5, presentation and possible discussion regarding the status of work being conducted by PSPRS consultants and possible review of current PSPRS pension funding policy.
Okay. Now, maybe the best way to kick this off, David, I know you want to make sort of opening comments and everything, but if you could just, in your opening comments, indicate the identity of the consultant. I know I saw the name, but why them? I know that they're already engaged, and we're not trying to question that, but it gives us a sense of what their experience is and how far we should and how deep we should go in questioning. And so I thought it would be useful for the commission if you could just tell us a little bit about them and include that in your opening remarks.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the commission for the opportunity. So as the town manager and myself, we're having discussions and we've been approached by a couple different a couple different firms, even before we really asked for it. You know, we got engagement letters, and but those firms were primarily in the financial services sector of that specializes in issuance of bonds, so brokerage houses. And and as we kind of were having some discussions, we thought that those firms, there's nothing wrong with them. We've actually utilized one of those firms for some of the deals that the debt issuances that the town has had historically, and so forth. We thought that they would not really provide a balanced perspective in terms of whether a debt issuance would be advantageous to the town, to be just really blunt about it. And so we started having discussions about, well, what other types of financial consultants could we engage for this? Because we really wanted this to be an unbiased, balanced perspective to look at all of the options available and crunch through the numbers, do the analysis and say, okay, this, this solution is the most financially advantageous to the town. And not really be swayed or have some, you know, have some sort of, I guess, propensity to influence the process and the decision one way or the other in terms of debt issuance. So, you know, so we started having discussion, and we actually got a bid from another financial consultant, but he was kind of more or less non-responsive through much of the process. And then we talked about CBIZ. Now CBIZ is a financial services firm that is very diversified in terms of the services that they perform. I know that, you know, we utilize CBIZ on our health benefits. So they're a broker locally. We utilize their local office for our health benefits in terms of negotiating on behalf of the town with our health providers, whether it's United Healthcare or Delta Dental or our vision benefits provider. So so we're familiar with them, but they also are national and they have a national presence. And even they're even a firm that has an audit arm. And so so they have CPAs on staff, they have actuaries on staff nationally that they bring a lot of different competencies and skills to the table. Diverse financial service skills to the table. And so, and they're not, you know, they are not, you know, they're not, even though they have an awareness of the debt markets, they are not active in terms of, that's one of the things that they don't do. They don't actually go out and sell bonds on behalf of clients. So that's, they seem to be a good fit. And as we started having some preliminary discussions with them, you know, they brought a team to the table that we felt was capable, competent, qualified to perform this analysis without any sort of bias to it, and that's really what we were trying to achieve. So, so that's how we ended up with CBIZ. But you know, even though again we utilize them locally for health benefits, the people that we are dealing with for this analysis and this study. They are not in the health arena. They are, this is pretty much what they do. They do financial analysis and try to develop strategies for clients, to help them, achieve what they're trying to achieve. And so, you know, they do net present value, calculations, et cetera. And that's pretty much what we're asking them to do with this study.
Okay. All right. Why don't we go ahead and well, let me ask the commissioners, do you have any questions, David, so far regarding who we're going to be working with here? Have any of you worked with CBIZ before? Okay, so fresh group of people, so no preconceived the ideas. All right, David, want to start with their status of work that's being conducted at the moment and tell us where they are?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you, members of the commission. So we've already had a couple, as I've mentioned in my memoranda for you this evening, we've already had a couple status updates with CBIZ. They sent us a fairly extensive laundry list of requests to kind of kick off the engagement. And we've been responsive, staff, myself and staff have been responsive. They actually set up a portal for us to upload documents to, which was very, very helpful and efficient. So at the last update conference call that I had with them, they have received all the inputs. We just wanted to confirm assumptions, make sure that we're on the same page, tracking the same direction, that they had, you know, all the information that they needed to begin their work and start building the model, and then seeing what types of information the model spit out in terms of, again, what was the most advantageous to the town in terms of net present value savings. So that's kind of where things stand at the moment. The schedule, I attached the schedule for you this evening, and hopefully you've had a chance to review it. We do, in 3 weeks, we have a special Budget Finance Commission meeting established where the consultants will present to the commission various options of their model and the information that that it's generating, the data that it's generating, and allow the commission to weigh in and provide more feedback to the consultants. And then a week following that, so in 3 weeks we have the special meeting. In 4 weeks we have a regular meeting where they will come back, and hopefully we'll have more discussion at that point in time, and the commission, you'll have enough information at that point in time to both revise the policy for next year, but also provide a strong recommendation to the council in terms of direction for whatever option is most advantageous. Now, I know Commissioner Newell emailed me, earlier this week or last week, I believe. One of his concerns, and it's a very valid one, so I just thought that I'd mention it. And Commissioner Newell, certainly feel free to chime in. His concern was regarding the policy itself and making sure that the policy objectives are really first and foremost as to what the consultant what they're tasked to do, and I agree with that. I don't really disagree with that perspective at all. I think as we look forward, the policy, we need to keep that really front and center. I don't want that to kind of get pushed to the background. The way I explain it, the way I'm thinking about it, and I may be wrong. Certainly you can call me out on this, but I kind of wanted to see what the initial calculations look like in terms of the various options. And then as we kind of focus down on what those options were and what, whether it's a combination of debt issuance, reserve contribution on the front end, et cetera. As we kind of narrowed that down as to what proposed to present the highest net present value savings to the town, then we look at, really the policy aspect of it and saying, okay, how are we going to hit 70% funding by, I think, 2022? And how are we going to hit 80% by 2026 and 90% by 2024, 70%, 2028, 80%, 90% by 2032, and finally 100% by 2036. That's those targets that the commission and the council, you all and the council agreed to. And so we want to make sure that we're staying on track with those. Now, we may need to, again, depending on what proposal generates the highest savings, net present value savings to the town, we may accelerate that, may adjust it. But at this point in time, we certainly want to make sure that those policy targets that the council agreed to and approved in the current policy, that those targets are met. So Commissioner Newell, do you have any, you know, I mean, I know we were kind of going back and forth. I don't want to speak for you again, so feel free to jump in.
No, I think you've summed that up. I mean, my concern is obviously I think we're going to have an opportunity here to get some research to figure out are there opportunities we can take advantage of in the current bond markets to accelerate our goals and come up with something more aggressive. Obviously, that depending on how aggressive we want to take advantage of some of those options that they're investigating wouldn't generate enough money early in order to hit some of those goals. But you know, from my point of view, depending on the opportunities, and obviously spending money has its own opportunity cost of the things we won't be able to do in other areas of our budget moving forward, and that's always something to think about. Is the goal, to be, the previous policy was to be paid 100% by 2036. Whether it's the 70, 80, 90, 100 with those incremental goals, whether is the goal to be take advantage of an opportunity and get to 100% and hold it there, or is it to take, knowing what we know about the assumptions, get our pension funded to a point where even though if the assumptions play out over a 10-year period, at the end of that 10-year period, we're still going to be 100% funded. I think those are the ideas that I've been sitting on. It's like, well, what opportunities do we have? And obviously, there are opportunity costs to prepaying some of this and catching up quicker. But there's also that savings that we can definitely take advantage of. But I want to make sure that we're focused on, does the solution fit the goals of the council and what the policy of the approved policy is.
Okay. I think those are very good comments. Let's open it up to the floor here and commissioners. Questions for Mr. Gephardt or? Yes, Jim.
Could we go through these proposed assumptions, Dave? I find some of them a little confusing and in a couple of cases not necessarily realistic.
Certainly, Commissioner Beasley. Do you want to go through all of the assumptions or do you have any in particular that kind of stand out to you?
Yeah, why don't we do that? Let me ask some questions.
Okay.
The projected unfunded you have is $26 million. That in reality is not a realistic number because it does not take in account the current market value of your assets, and it uses some interest rate assumptions that basically reduce the real level of your liabilities. So what are we trying to get at here? Are we trying to get at just solving an actuarial problem, or are we trying to get at solving an actual long-term funding problem?
Commissioner Beasley, members of the commission, I understand the question. I guess I'm not sure what we would do as an alternative. I mean, we could certainly push up the unfunded or, say, well, the estimate is actually $30 million or $34 million, but I don't know that that's going to be grounded, I mean, in reality either. And I would probably prefer, in fact, I'd strongly prefer not to be making some kind of assumption that there's no data really to back it up. I think the $26 million is based upon an actuarial calculation. I mean, we all understand that. It's based upon assumptions, yes. I mean, those assumptions, right, wrong, or indifferent, they're never going to be perfect to what reality is. And really what they're trying to do, what actuaries try to do, in effect, is they try to predict the future. And that's, as we all know, that's virtually impossible, but you have to start with some sort of data and metrics to real information to as a baseline there. And so I don't know, I don't have a good solution. I'm sorry about that. I don't have a good answer for trying to change what that number ought to be, because I don't know what it ought to be. I mean, it could it be closer to 30 million? Yeah, it could be closer, but then that's going to be dependent upon, you know, obviously the assumed earnings rate not continuing to not be hit moving forward, whatever that rate is. There's all kinds of different, you know, factors in terms of even mortality rates for the people that are covered under the plan. And we all know what these assumptions are because we've had a lot of discussion about these. I don't have a good answer for you, and unfortunately, I don't know. I'm not going to try to be an actuary because I'm not qualified to be one. I think this is the best information we have. I think what I'm looking for the consultants to do is to take what we have, to give us a model so that that model then can be updated as it changes moving forward. And if we don't hit the 3.5% wage growth rates that are assumed in the PSPRS plan, you know, then, you know, and those wage growth rates, they, you know, as they've talked about doing, they start dialing that down to 3% and then 2.5% year over year, you know, and that balloons up the liability, then we can then make adjustments based upon what the model tells us, even moving forward. I don't have a good solution. I don't know what else we can do. The best information we have right now is that the liability is 26 million. Could it be more? Yeah, it could be more. And could it be less? Yeah, probably not likely, but it could. I mean, we just don't know. We don't know what the future holds, and that liability really is predicated upon the future.
Yeah, I partially agree with you. Because that same actuarial report clearly defines what the market value of the assets are, clearly defines what the unfunded liability levels are at current or adjusted interest rates, without having to go through and change any assumptions of lifespans, retirement issues, any of that stuff. All I'm suggesting is that we might want to take a look at a second alternative to that 26 million without having to change any of the basic numbers that we're paying the actuary to develop. And that additional, most likely, bracket 5-6 million bucks could be very material over the long haul. That's all I'm suggesting.
Would the consultant have any information when they come out with their options as to what they may consider the best figure to, especially if you're given options to go out and borrow money, you know, what would they recommend the amount that we borrow?
Yeah, I think Commissioner Mason, members of the commission, they may have a sense. I think they're going to pretty much run the model based upon what we tell them to run. I think there's a potential for this number to be updated in April when the plan PSPRS comes out with its GASB 68 report, which then is that report, if you're familiar with it, it's really more detailed in terms of asset, you know, contributions, investment income specific to our plan itself. It's more like an accounting report that shows all the inflows and then all the outflows, even the disbursements and benefits paid in the plan over this last year. So that report should be coming out shortly, and that really I think would maybe be a little bit tighter of a figure, but it's probably not going to be released till April. That's when it was released last fiscal year. So we can take a look at that. I think these are probably questions best suited for the consultant when they present, because if they have a perspective, again, they, they do these analyses fairly frequently, maybe not specific to PSPRS, but they do financial analyses all the time. That's kind of what their expertise is. And so I think that's something that, that maybe we can have that question and that discussion with them in about 3 weeks.
I, to jump back in here, I think the three things that I'm, you know, concerned, and I want to make sure that that are included when we're given options is, and again, David, correct me if I'm wrong, if I've got a percentage off somewhere, but, you know, one of the assumptions is that the accumulated assets of our fund, you know, are assumed and are planned to grow 7.3% a year. And the historical growth of those funds is 5.3%. And I would hope that if you know, the goal of the council and this commission was to be 100% funded through either a bond or a great payment, that the understanding is that to keep it 100% funded, we're going to have to make up the difference on a yearly basis of the 7.3% growth and what we're actually going to get at 5.3. And we can either do that one of two ways. We can do that by making yearly payments in addition of, you know, to make up for that shortfall on a yearly basis once we're 100% funded, or we fund it to a level where we think that the decay over a period of time will give us a window of 10 years where we know in 10 years' time it will have decayed enough to still be over 100%. And that's my purpose there. You know, obviously we have, a as we mentioned before, a wonderful savings, you know, sitting in our general fund. There are statutory limits of the amount that we can earn back on that through specific funds that we're allowed to invest those in with the state treasury. And even though it's only getting 5.3% rather than the 7.3 we want, maybe that 5.3% is a better place for some of that money. But for me, I just want to make sure that if the goal is, you know, we want to be funded, we understand that even if we're 100% funded, we know that we're going to lag historically, not every year, but over a period of time. We anticipate lagging 2% growth every year. And at 2% growth, when you're talking about asset values of $44 million, is a significant chunk of change. And I would like to know and make sure that the consultants, you know, communicate that back with council so that they're very clear on, if we're at 100% funded, this is still the amount extra you're going to have to pay every year to keep it 100% funded.
Yeah, if I may, Commissioner Newell, members of the commission, the consultant is going to calculate their model based upon a 5.3, because that's what I've directed them to do. And they can increase it to 6, or they can dial it down to 4. But basically, that earnings rate, we're not basing it, they're not going to base their calculations upon 7.3, because quite frankly, I think we all hopefully understand that that's just not going to be, we hope that that's realistic. We just know that it's probably not going to be realistic. So they're going to calculate that that based upon 5.3, and then they have an earnings rate stressor where they'll actually, and I think I like 5.3 because their stressors are 200 basis points above and then 200 basis points below. So they're going to do some analysis and calculations that say, okay, what if it was only 3.3? Then what does that look like? And then what if it's 7.3? And that 7.3 obviously then would more closely align with what the plan projects. But yeah, so, you know, I think 5.3, and again, I'm open to changing that, but I think 5.3 is a more reasonable assumption for investment earnings moving forward. And so that's what their calculations are going to be predicated upon, just starting out. And then they'll do some stress testers, or earnings rate stressors to those models to see what that looks like as well.
I am assuming, David, the arbitrage rebate rules do not apply to the debt that you borrow with a contribution to a pension plan.
Yes, Commissioner Beasley, that is absolutely correct. They don't apply because these would be taxable bonds or taxable. It would be a taxable debt issuance. So because it's taxable, there is no, you know, it's not subject to arbitrage. If it was a tax exempt issuance, then it would be. But these types of structures are always taxable. And so they would not be subject to arbitrage rules.
David, is the expectation that they will provide us with a recommendation for options to get there? And maybe there's, you know, options 1, 2, 3, and 4, and we look at the pros and cons of each option. Is that the goal?
Yeah, Vice Chair Salverson, absolutely. Members of Commission, that's what my goal is to get them to where they're providing options and recommendations. And then it'll be up to, again, you know, depending on what the policy objectives are, going back to Commissioner Newell's comments earlier, to, you know, for the commission then to make a proposal to update the policy in consort with making a strong recommendation to the council saying, you know, here's the policy, here's the strategic objectives that we're trying to achieve. And this is the best, you know, kind of the best proposal, whatever that proposal is, whether it's a combination or whether it's just a, you know, paying down the, you know, the making a significant reserve contribution or making additional annual contributions in addition to the ARC, making those, you know, but really those making those more significant than $500,000, you know, bringing it up to maybe $1.5 million or $2 million or whatever that looks like. I don't know what that looks like, but you know, really having the consultant run those numbers again and determine based upon what our objectives are from policy and whatever else, taking a balanced perspective and saying this is attainable and achievable, and this is the direction that we think is the best suited for the town.
Okay, and then is your thought that this is a one-time activity with them, or, you know, and then we lay out here's where we think we should be, you know, in the next 10 years, or is it we're going to come back to you next year and plug everything in the model again and look at where we are?
Vice Chair Salverson, I think I like where you're going with that. That's an excellent question. I'm hoping that it's not annual.
Right.
You know, I'm hoping that maybe it's every 3 or 4 years that we come back and we revisit this conversation. And I think that, but, you know, the liability is going to tell the story, how well we dealt with it. And if it starts to balloon again, then I think there's going to have to be some adjustment moving forward, you know, irrespective of whatever solution we come to today. And so, yeah, I think this is something that needs to continually be on our radar. I'm just hoping that it's not an annual thing, because if it is, then I think we probably didn't do a good enough job on this front end of this process of you know, outlining what that proposed solution looks like and how well it dealt with the problem.
Mm-hmm. David, when you have a debt term, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
When you list a debt term of 20 years and the policy target is at this point 16 years, are we in fact pushing out the funding of this liability?
You know, I think Commissioner Beasley, members of the commission, I think we're not going to know until we get, you know, further along in the process and we see how the fund performs and whether it's, you know, meeting, you know, if it's performing in, similarly to what the model shows financially, from a financial perspective. And I think we're going to be in a good spot there, but if it's not, then I would say, yeah, it probably is pushing out the liability a little bit. You know, as you're well aware, the way these things work is you issue debt on the front end, you get a bunch of proceeds, it goes, you know, wherever it goes, either towards the fund or a separate trust or, you know, or whatever we decide to do with it to earn money. And then we're hoping that at some point, again, this is all dependent upon structure, but at some point it's got to make its way back into the fund to pay benefits. And so, so I think the long story short on this, I don't really have a good answer for that because I don't know, I can't predict the future and I don't know what the fund's going to do. If the goal, you know, if we do a, you know, a 20-year debt issuance and that debt issuance is, you know, is at 2.5% and the fund is earning 5.5 or 5.3 or whatever it's earning over that period of time, I think we're going to be in good shape. You know, I think that's kind of the goal of why you would do a debt issuance. That's how they're being sold in the market currently. And it's not going to really matter whether it's 20 years or 16 years. If the earnings outperform the debt issuance, then you've got, you know, you've got some money to play with. That all should roll back in towards benefit payments at the end of the day and savings ultimately to the town. So I think that's really what the end goal is of why we would do a debt issuance. But debt issuances can be scary, and there's risk there. And I think that's something that that I'm hoping that we, as a commission, yourselves, even the town council, that as we have these discussions, that there's a very clear understanding of what the risks are, and especially as it relates to debt issuance, because I've seen those, and if the market tanks, if we have a very severe recession or whatever, debt issuances, they can be challenging to deal with. And I know, you know, I've spoke again with Commissioner Newell about that. He's from Oregon, and you know, we've seen, you know, I think you've seen that. I know I have, from my time in Oregon about 15 years ago. So, right before the market collapsed. So, you know, if your debt issuance, if you're paying 2.5%, 3%, and then you're earning money at -15, that's really challenging. And it really has the impact of ballooning and spiking your liability. And so you're back in the same point that you were before you ever issued debt. So, and you know, to recover that 15%, you're going to have to make, you know, 30% or more on that money just to recover the 15. And I don't know, I mean, making 30% in any given year, that's challenging as well. So, you know, it becomes a really difficult thing to try to dig yourself out of a hole when you have negative returns in the market, as we all know.
I think we really want to have them maybe give us some comments on that, because normally you don't want to have your bond repayment go longer than the debt that you're paying off. So to have a 16-year amortization schedule that we're on now and go 20 years on the debt, that may not be a good idea. So I think we just need to see what they give us, because in doing some reading on this, you know, a couple options is, you know, you get your proceeds and put them in a trust and hope the return rate covers, or you just take your proceeds and give it to PSPRS to pay it down. And I'm assuming they'll give us options on those, or give us data on those two options to see, you know, how those, which one might be a better option than the other, plus any other options you come up with. But I think, you know, we kind of know that the way that the fund runs and the assumptions, that there's always going to be differences. We might be 100% one year after we pay it off and back to 97. But I think at that point, the amount of money we're paying out should be significantly less than what we're paying now. But so I think we just should wait and see what kind of options they give us before we get into a lot of deep discussions here, because we don't have very much information to go on right now.
Yeah, Commissioner Mason, I would agree with that. I agree with those comments. I'm not too concerned about the debt term and the structure of that. I think that's something that that's a bridge we can cross down the road. I think 20 years is kind of a standard debt term for government issuances. With that said, I'm not opposed to dialing it down to 16. I think typically what you see, why you would issue, this is what's a little strange about this this situation is, typically when you issue debt in a government environment, it's for, you know, a capital project. It's for something that's tangible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and many times, oftentimes, and this is even in the private sector, oftentimes that tangible asset is securing the debt that you're issuing. In this case, there's nothing tangible that is securing the debt. I mean, there could be on a COP, we could, you know, it could be a lease back transaction or whatever, where we would actually secure it with existing town facilities. But in this, if we're just, you know, issuing taxable bonds here, there's not really anything other than the excise tax revenue. There's not really anything that's securing the repayment or the debt itself. And so, you know, basically we're swapping one debt for another debt. And that's what feels a little bit funky about this is, you know, we've got a debt that's on our books. That's an estimated, you know, liability that the actuaries have calculated, and we're booking that. And we're basically swapping it for another debt that we're hardening. One's a soft debt because it can fluctuate. And when we issue this, again, it's another risk that needs to be considered. When you issue either a COP or a taxable bond, you're hardening that debt. And you're saying, okay, this thing is really set and these are the repayment terms and it's fixed over the life of the debt, whatever those repayment terms are. So, you know, these are things that, again, we can have discussions about down the road. I don't know, pointing to or responding to Commissioner Mason's comments about, you know, whether we should put it in PSPRS or a trust, I don't know that the consultants are necessarily going to opine on that or recommend, because I think, again, these are things that there's risks either way, even with that. And I think, to me, just my sense of it, I tend to lean more conservative, you know, just full disclosure. There's more risk in not putting the money in PSPRS than there is with putting it in the trust, especially if things go wrong.
That's why I think that should be some options that they tell us, because in me doing some research, putting money in a trust and hoping that the return rate is going to do it may not necessarily be the best bet depending on your situation. So I would hope that would be some of the options that they discussed so that we know what direction to go in.
Yeah, Commissioner Mason, those options will be on the table and we will have discussion about those. And if we do establish a trust, that trust will be irrevocable. It'll be set aside. We will have to have a separate trust board to manage those trust assets. I mean, these are all the things that we'll have to consider and work through and walk through if that's the direction that we decide to go in and the direction ultimately that the council approves.
David, quite a real quick question, not so much on all the options and everything, but the product that you're expecting to get back from CBIZ, is it going to be a static model or is it dynamic? I mean, are you expecting that? I mean, we're sitting here and talking about all the options and we could do this and do that. When you get consultants come in and give you options that are on paper, it makes it a little more difficult because now you're kind of stuck in this spot. Whereas if they bring in a model that you can actually put in these various variables, at least you got a working model that you know, well, what if? Now, what if always becomes the biggest part of these kind of projects. What are you anticipating in getting back from that?
Chair Latchford, members of the commission, I anticipate that it's going to be dynamic. I'm hoping that, as you know, again, they're going to present at the next special meeting in 3 weeks. I fully anticipate, and this will be, you know, conversations that I'll have with them. Even I think this next Monday or Tuesday, I've got another call status update with them that we'll go over that, what that looks like, and kind of play that out. My anticipation is that they will be able to, on, you know, in real time, adjust variables and key information in the model so that we can actually take a look at what type of impact that has. Again, so that with the intent that we can get to a solution that is best suited for the town, both currently and long term.
Are they going to deliver a model that we could run?
Yeah, I mean, Commissioner Beasley, absolutely. That is in the their contract that the model is ours, and we will be able to play with it. Now we've had, you know, as you all are aware, we've had a model that PSPRS, actually the actuaries, I believe, developed. PSPRS distributed it, but it really wasn't capable of being quite as dynamic as I think we would like. In that once you kind of factored in or loaded in additional contributions into that model, it always, you know, had the impact of reducing your contribution rate moving forward. And, you know, I think that's that was kind of a deficiency of what that model produced. Then you couldn't really get a sense of whether you were gaining or losing, because it was always adjusting the numbers on the back end so that you could never see what the true impact and cost savings were, as it were, in that model. So I think they were trying to update that, and I've asked asked PSPRS for an updated version, and it was supposed to be out, you know, 3 weeks to a month ago, and I still haven't seen it. So anyways.
Okay. I think because I'm probably going to be the slow student here in the class with this, you know, pension funds aren't something I'm necessarily all, I have some experience with them, but that's why we have Jim on. But so I understand of where we are right now, you know, the town has a policy, which is the council's policy, and it's been done in accordance with Arizona state statutes. We've got to keep that in front of us and understand that that's the policy, and if we're going to change that policy, we have to come up with the documentation and the substance that's going to say this is what you should need, this is what you should do. This is the firm recommendation that's coming out of this commission, and it's going to go to the council, and this is what you should do. And I think where I'm a little fuzzy is, okay, we have all these options we talked about. There's going to be a lot of things that we have to look at. But when we say to the council, this is what you should do, I think we have to make sure that they understand what it will do. And that's going to be a little difficult because so many of the inputs to this are just unknowns. You know, I looked at the financial assumptions you gave them, but then we have the personnel assumptions that have to go into this. There's a lot that could happen in 20 years. So I think I'm really anxious to listen to what they bring in and everything, but I can see that to be able to give the council something that's workable, it's got to go beyond the financial to some degree. I don't know how much you can do that. I'm just, I don't want to speak out of turn here. I just don't know. But anyway, my sense of it is that right now, the way the consultants are working and the way that we are coming to an agreement here, we've got a policy. We have to keep that in front of us. And whatever we come up with, if we're going to change that policy, we have to give very good reasons to do so. And it's kind of my simplistic way of trying to understand where we are right now. Help me if I've got off track here at all. So I'm way out here. I don't want to hold you guys up. So. What do the commissioners think? Do we have other questions for David? Anything more on the assumptions or where we are at the policy right now?
Are they going to make any suggestions as to what might be a permanent source of funds to pay either the liabilities that they're focusing on, which would include potential pension obligation bond?
Yeah, Commissioner Beasley, I believe that's really outside the scope of what we're tasking them to do. I think, you know, more or less what we were hoping for them to accomplish is to run through the numbers, run through different scenarios, run through different options, see what ones made the most sense, were the most feasible financially. You know, I think looking at permanent funding sources, I think that's something that that is better tasked with the town and council and even the BFC making recommendations moving forward. So I think that one of the challenges, and we heard about it in the monthly financial presentation this evening, that that we have to look at is a build out of the town, and whether we, you know, whether the council chooses to annex more land or not. I mean, these are discussions that that I'm sure we'll be having as a town with the council, and they'll provide the input to staff on what, where they want the town to go and what direction. But that's going to have a, you know, that's going to have an impact in terms of new revenues that the town could rely upon, either sales tax or development related or whatever, moving forward. And so these are things that, again, from a strategy standpoint, that that we need to be thinking about, you know, as we're looking at, you know, a kind of a permanent or more stable or kind of a structured source of revenue moving forward, that we could dedicate towards the liability. You know, I mean, that's going to be difficult in the current environment without bringing in annexation or some kind of new development and growth in the town. And if the town is built out and that growth isn't occurring, then we've got to, you know, we've got to find other ways or other means of dealing with the issue again. So
let me ask one other question and it relates to the calendar. We've got March 9th as a special meeting that we're going to have a presentation by the consultants. On the 17th, oh, pardon me, the 16th, are the consultants coming back?
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to have an additional discussion then to include finalizing a pension policy, because it's going to go to the town council on the 7th of April before we will have a chance to meet again.
Yes.
It's going to be one busy meeting on the 16th. Okay.
Yeah, you know, Commissioner Beasley, I apologize, but it is an aggressive schedule, but I think the intent here is that we kind of get this pushed as rapidly as possible towards completion, and hopefully we get there. And I think we will, but trying to get it loaded in and included into the budget, because that's the other piece of this that, that we've got to be cognizant of, is that whatever the council decides to do, we've got to have the ability to get that into the tentative budget and also the final adopted budget for the town for next fiscal year. Otherwise, you know, I mean, we're doing more work with budget amendments and whatever else. So that that was really what we were trying to accomplish, is just making sure that as we went through the budget process, that this PSPRS issue was on the front burner. We're not pushing it on, you know, placing it on the back burner and kind of going through our budget process and kind of, you know, not really paying attention to it and going, you know, business as usual. That's really what the intent here is that as we go through and we identify all the various needs of the town, whether they're operational or capital or, you know, whatever, police, parks and rec, whatever the various issues and budget challenges that we have for next fiscal year, and trying to identify those and deal with those, that we also deal with the PSPRS issue as well, and that we have a good prioritization and a good strategy again for ensuring that this remains high on the priority list and it doesn't get kind of placed on the back burner. So
Will the town council have the privilege of having a meeting with the consultant?
Commissioner Beasley, yeah, the council will be, the consultant will lead the discussion and do the presentation of the recommended option or options on the April 7th meeting.
The April 7th meeting is for the council. So the March 9th meeting is going to be the commission plus the consultants, obviously, so is that expected to start at 4 as well?
It is, unless I get directed otherwise.
But it looks like March 17th at that council meeting, that's when the consultant briefs the options, and I guess also that's when our recommendation gets presented as well?
Yeah, there'll be Commissioner Mason, there will be a couple presentations to the council to get them, you know, I think the first, you know, you're right, the March 17th meeting will kind of be their first gaze at the process, their first gaze at the, you know, they're trying to understand the issues, the options presented, et cetera. And then, again, hopefully getting comfortable enough to approve something on April 7th so that we can meet our budget goals and timeframes.
Would it make sense to try to have a joint meeting study session with the council so that they have a little bit more time with understanding as to what this process is?
Commissioner Beasley, I think that's in...
If I may jump in.
I don't know
that
I can speak. I think that's a legal issue. We have legal challenges with that. Town Manager Jacobs.
Yeah, may I jump in, Commissioner Beasley? One of the things, the way that the council's advisory bodies, such as the commissions, are established, are specifically to be independent bodies. In other words,
I'm afraid we can't hear you, Mary.
Can't hear you.
Oh, sorry.
Hey, you're fading out.
Okay. Can you hear me now better? Mm-hmm. So sorry.
Yes.
One of the things that the way that the town council has established the advisory bodies, such as this commission, is that they're intended to be independent bodies on purpose. And so the joint study sessions, I think, recently has caused some question regarding whether that's really advisable from our legal perspective, but we will take a look at it. And certainly the Budget and Finance Commission can be available for the discussion in case there's a question or maybe a comment, a sharing of Mr. Chairman, you could represent the views of the commission and we can, you know, include that as maybe part of the conversation, but, you know, having that I think the intent is that the council would hear from you, hear your concerns and then, and your recommendations and then be in a position to make a decision or remand it back. That they can do that as well. They could remand it back to, hey, thanks so much. This was great, but could you look into X, Y, and Z and give us a recommendation on that? That is another alternative that they could decide to, you know, to do.
Okay. Well, I think let us see. I think the next critical step, my step here, is the March 9th meeting with the consultants and everyone. And because I know we're going to have a lot of questions, let me ask the commission members, would it be useful to have a little bit longer meeting and start earlier in the day? And then, of course, if you did think that was a good idea, we'd check with David and staff to see if that's okay with them. What if we were to start the meeting at 2 o'clock? If we finish up early, then everybody gets to go home for dinner. What do the commissioners think of that?
Fine. If
I'm good with it.
Yeah, I'm up with it.
If it's and up to staff, if they can do it.
Yeah, well, that's where I'm going next.
That it makes pickup difficult, but I'm willing to work with it if necessary.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it'll be good for you, Dave.
It'll make it difficult to do school pickup. I'll have to disappear for about 20 minutes. Okay. I'm willing to work with it. Okay. I can connect in my car. It's just, it'll be on, you know, I'll have a spawned Zoom account and be listening in the car. So.
Okay. So, David, Mary, what do you think of that idea? Would that help?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I'm fine with that. I do have a 2:00 PSPRS local board, local pension board meeting, but I think that can either be changed or we can have, someone else chair that meeting because I'm currently the chair of that board. So, to me, this is certainly priority. And if the commission desires to meet at 2:00 on the 9th, I will make that happen.
Okay. All right. Then
may I ask for 3 instead of 2?
3?
Well, that's also our week that we're doing budget reviews with all of the departments. And so we've blocked out that whole week and I could, an extra hour.
Okay.
Whatever works for you guys, that's fine.
Okay, yeah, 3's fine. I mean, we're just trying to grab as much time as we possibly can so that we are thorough in our analysis and we're all coming to the same place. So, all right, so why don't we set it for 3:00? David, you'd be so kind as to put that out, notice out at 3:00. But the commissioners are here, and so I think we're in agreement with that. And I guess the only other people to be consulted would be the consultants. Of course, if their models is dynamic, if they can't make 3, we could start without them and then have them come in and face the barrage of questions we'll have, I'm sure. Okay, is there anything else on this particular section and subject matter that we should discuss at this time, David, or are we set?
I don't, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I don't have anything else. It's certainly up to you. I'm willing to discuss anything related to the policy or the agenda item. But if you all are comfortable and don't have any other comments or questions, I think we're in good shape.
Okay. All right. Well, I see no hands up and I see no questions coming forward. So let us proceed. And thank you for that. Next on the agenda, we're going to hear from Councilmember Nicholson, who I believe is still on the line. And Councilmember, if you're there, you're unmuted. So I'll turn the floor over to you and see if you have anything for us that we'd like to be aware of.
Well, my video is not working. Well, thanks, guys. And first of all, I want to say congratulations to John for being commissioner, and thanks, James, for being the commissioner for the last little while here, and thanks again to Kathy, too, for stepping up for the vice chair, and everyone else, Mike, Dave, appreciate you guys, Kathy. Let's see, going on the list, I just want to explain to you my non-attendance. I have been, my work schedule has me working from noon to 8:00 or 1:00 till 9:00. So I can't make Tuesdays, but today I have the day off. So 3 of the big ones, the push decision is coming up here very soon. So obviously that has some financial impact to the town. Rancho Vistoso, the golf course negotiations are still in effect. Can't really talk about that much because it's still in negotiations. And then Westward Look is going to be coming up in a month or so. So, there's a big amount of tax revenue based on that. That's pretty much it. And I just also want to say thanks for all your awesome questions about PSPRS. I do appreciate all your guys' work and staying on top of that. That's definitely a passion of mine. And And thanks to everyone for all the work that you guys are doing. I guess I can't answer any questions, but that's all I got for you.
Okay. Well, we won't put you on the spot there. Thanks very much for that input, council member. I think tomorrow night, if I remember right, is the discussion of the council on Bush Bridge.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So if any of the members want to tune into that, channel and time is somewhere on the website. So I think that's being public. That's, yeah, it's a public meeting. So sure.
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, also, too, I think David might have mentioned in the beginning, too, we have our strategic planning session Thursday and Friday, and is public, so you can attend. Not many people do, but it's very boring, but anyways.
Now, that's by Zoom, as I recall, right? That came out, and that's an all-day meeting for both days?
Yeah, it's, I can't remember exact time. I believe it's 9 to 5, but it's Thursday and Friday, so... Yeah. It's good. I mean, yeah. I mean, not many people show up, so we talk a little more freely than a general council session or whatever. So, I don't know. It's all good.
Right. Well, I suppose if anybody wants to tune in, then you've got a lot of time to do it, and you should do it. But 16 hours worth of, you know, have to give that some thought.
I don't blame you. That's fine.
Yeah. But it'll be on Zoom and recorded, I presume, and available afterwards?
Yep. I would imagine it is. Yeah, I do watch all your guys' session at 1.5 times speed, which is kind of nice. Not that I don't like listening to you guys normally, but I'll be honest.
Well, know that you're with us in spirit, if not.
Yeah, at night, a little bit later at night, or sometimes in the mornings. But yeah. But I do appreciate everyone's work. I know you guys don't get paid. And thanks, David and Mary and everyone else, too, the people that are getting paid.
So, Josh, I'll be certain to lower my voice and talk slower.
Okay, you don't get the chipmunk voice, surprisingly, somehow. I don't know. I was waiting to listen to the chipmunks, but you may have to bring some helium in one of these days. Have a good laugh.
Okay, well, how to lose control of a meeting, that's my first Okay. All right. Next item on the agenda is future agenda items. And of course, we just put a big one on. Is there anything in particular that any of the commissioners would like to bring forward in future agenda items that we should notate? Okay. Hearing none. I want to thank everyone for their time and effort tonight. And I'm going to call for an adjournment, and if I could have a motion.
Motion.
Second.
To adjourn in a second. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. And opposed? No. Thank you very much, and everyone have a good night. We'll see you on March 9th at 3 p.m., and we'll get the information out to you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Stay healthy.
Thank you. Good night.